Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. And I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And I'm joined today again on Back in the Podcast by Kino Callahan, Social Democrat TD for Dublin Bay North. Delighted to have you back on the podcast, Keen.
Thanks very much, Rory, for having me back on. Delighted to be here.
Great. Well, we're going to talk about housing, and there's been, I suppose in many ways, housing has gone off, understandably, the agenda to a certain extent during COVID. But there's definitely, it's been coming back again with a number of, I think, measures that the government have been proposing. The Minister for Housing has been proposing and putting forward, including the Affordable Housing Bill and the bill on the LDA, the Land Development Agency. And of course, there's also been the issues around the recent debts in homeless services and also the wider issue of the ongoing homelessness crisis. And of course, we have the issue of the Constitution and the demands from campaigns like Home for Good and civil society for a right to housing to be inserted in the Constitution. So we're going to try to cover these today, Keen. And I suppose initially, you know, just to explain to our listeners, you are a member of the Oireachtas Housing Committee. And in terms of your kind of attending these meetings, what's your sense of, is there a shift underway in our housing policy, do you think, under this new minister?
I think there's definitely a difference in rhetoric from this government than the past one. Is there a shift? I don't really detect much of a shift. I think a lot of it is the same sort of policies that we've had for years here. A lot of it really actually, to be honest with you, a lot of it, from what I can see, is pretty much being written by developers and lobbyists working for the industry. So, I mean, for example, the big idea that the minister has in terms of housing affordability and where a lot of the resources and a lot of the money in the affordable housing budget is going into is this shared equity loan scheme that they have in the UK. And that was lobbied for very heavily by developers last summer. And they're with people who've been pushing that very, very strongly. And that's been despite the fact that senior government officials in the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform have been very critical of it, have said that this scheme will push up prices, will make housing less affordable, that it's been pushed for, they've said that it's been pushed for by developers because they know it will increase prices. And we've also seen today, you know, today we saw some critique from the ESRI on it as well. And they were at the housing committee and they were saying, the ESRI were saying that this is likely to lead to increased house prices as well. So this is effectively another subsidy for private developers. And that's the big idea that the current minister has in terms of housing affordability. And it's quite a contrast to what was promised this time a year ago during the election time. We were told during the election by the current minister for housing, Dara Bryan and Fianna Fáil, that they'd provide 50,000 direct build affordable homes over the next 5 years, as well as 50,000 direct build social homes. And now what we actually see in terms of what's getting delivered is they're projecting that they're going to have about 530 affordable and cost rental homes built this year. That's 1% of what we've been promised. So there's this big kind of, you know, the rhetoric or the promises might have changed a bit, but in terms of actual delivery and what's happening, my point of view, what I can see is it's very much kind of developer-led, industry-led. It's policies that have been done in the past, either in the UK or here, and has kind of failed and pushed up prices. So I think that's where we're at the moment, unfortunately.
And just on that, the presentation today by the ESRI, which a number of the members, if I'm correct, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, asked the ESRI presenter to amend their statement, opening statement that they'd put into the Oireachtas Housing Committee that got coverage, that stated that this policy, the Help to Buy scheme, would inflate prices. What was your reaction to that? What did you think? What actually happened?
Well, I mean, at the Oireachtas Housing Committee, you're going to have different experts coming in, making different contributions, giving different viewpoints. That's fine. And I think it's totally fine as well for members of the committee from different parties and different viewpoints as well to put in their oar, ask difficult questions and interrogate the information that they're getting. So I think all of that is fine. I think you could see that the members from the government parties are probably quite annoyed that the ESRI, you know, which is an independent research body and has got a lot of credibility, is giving them information that doesn't kind of fit the kind of government spin or narrative on this. And I think that jarred with them quite heavily. And I think it jarred with them quite heavily that their own officials in civil service have also been saying this. And not just them. I mean, a lot of different commentators, economists, Dave McWilliams, Cliff Taylor, loads of different people actually, you know, totally independent of this whole thing, have been saying this is really problematic if you put in measures that are effectively a subsidy to developers that will push up prices, creates house price inflation, that's actually counterproductive. It may seem that you're helping a first-time buyer, but actually by doing that, you're shifting the goalposts, the prices are going up in them. I think all of that has to be seen in the context of we have a real issue now at the moment because of, you know, quantitative easing, more money being put into the system, that more and more investment money is going into housing at the moment. And that's creating a problem for people in terms of affordability, because investment funds, pension funds are investing more and more into housing. That's squeezing other people out of the system. So I think this kind of evidence that we're getting from independent groups, it jars with government TDs and stuff. They don't want to hear it. And that is a problem. They, you know, shouldn't be introducing measures like this that don't have good evidence or good examples from other countries of working. So there is something like this in the UK, and you know, the London School of Economics in its analysis says that this pushed up the prices of homes in London by about 6%. Particularly because supply was constrained, which is one of the issues that we have here as well. So it's really important that those critiques are actually engaged with, listened to. And I think actually that element of the affordable housing bill should be scrapped. No proper case for introducing it has been brought in. And we'd be much better off putting the resources into direct build affordable housing and cost rental, which we do know works. And we do know from what, you know, the ESRI and NESC and all the other different independent think tanks have been saying, we do know that those sorts of policies make sense. There's been a big body of work and research done over years now, building up a kind of policy consensus in Ireland on those measures. So why the government is putting resources into something that is doomed to fail? And, you know, I mean, we do know why. You look at the lobby register and you can see quite clearly that there was a heavy amount of lobbying going on from developers and their representatives over the summer months looking for this in advance of the budget. So we do know why, but that's no way to be making policy, especially in housing. We paid a very heavy price for that kind of policy making in the past.
And it does seem, again, there is a disconnect, you know, within our housing policy, as you rightly point to the role of the large real estate investment funds that are in here now that are playing a huge role in, you know, pushing up property prices, in, you know, buying up units, that it seems that on the one hand, there's two things we need to do. We need to increase the direct build, but also we need to cool off that investment. They should be taxed properly as opposed to be getting, you know, a tax break. And they should be looked at things like the vacant, you know, property tax on, we know, you know, units of theirs have been left vacant. But in particular, they should be, I think there is a case for a real estate investment tax rather than a relief. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's really important. So I think they're distorting the entire housing supply in Ireland. And there's constraints on housing supply in terms of, you know, what land is available, what infrastructure is put in, and even in terms of your capacity in the building sector and your workforce and all that. And so when you have investment funds buying up these homes, it is at the expense of other people being able to buy homes or rent homes. And they are all about return, as you're kind of, you know, alluding to there. An investment fund will quite happily buy up 1,000 apartments or something like that in a large scheme or development. And they want to achieve a high rent for their apartments. So they will not put all of those on the market at once. They will put a certain number on the market at a high rent. And when they get them filled, they'll release a few more. Because on their balance sheet, it's much more important to them as an investment fund that they maintain the headline rental value of their properties, and that affects the asset price. And that's, they view it as an asset. They don't view it as people's homes. They view it as an asset. So filling them you know, and getting all of them rented out isn't the most important thing for them. It's actually maintaining what they, the price of what they view as their asset. And they'll undermine that if they release them all at once and let the rents fall to a more affordable level. So they're much more interested in kind of maintaining that artificial premium. And as you say, a vacancy tax would actually sort that out. You couldn't have all these brand new empty apartments sitting there in the middle of a housing crisis. If you tax that vacancy, it would create some movement. But more importantly, we shouldn't have this taxation system where effectively these REITs and investment funds virtually pay no tax at all. And we're at a time when there's investment funds and pension funds around the world looking to invest in property, and this is overheating property prices and home prices around the world. Bizarrely, our government is trying to attract more and more of this into Ireland, distort housing prices in Ireland at a time that other countries are trying to figure out how do we not have our housing supply distorted by this type of investment. So that absolutely has to be tackled. And yeah, it would be much better off in terms of affordable housing to be looking at direct build. So, there's a really good scheme there announced quite recently, for example, up in Dunemer in Lusk by Fingal County Council, and it's been built in conjunction with O'Coolan. And it's looking, in terms of affordability, you're looking at prices for, a two-bed apartment, you'd be able to, buy that from €166,000, and then a three-bed semi-home would be from €258,000. There's some options in between that. And they are prices that are genuinely affordable and that would be within reach for a good number of people at the moment who are kind of locked out of housing. But that's a very small scheme. There's just over about 30 homes in that. We really need to be looking at schemes like that in their thousands. And part of that then is making sure that the public land that we have available is used for social housing, affordable housing, cost rental. And I'd have very strong concerns the direction that we're going in now is we're going to see an increased amount of public land sold onto private developers, and that the government have been quite clear that they expect that about 40% of that would be for full market price homes. And then it would, there's no guarantee that that amount of homes won't actually be sold off to REITs and investment funds. In fact, everything that's happening at the moment would suggest they will. And this is going to be homes built in what's now public land, flipped to private developers. And we're going to be left in that situation, like the risk that we had with the Oscar Traynor Road, we're going to be left in that situation of REITs coming in, buying up new homes, and then the state subsidising people on lower incomes, renting those homes through HAP payments, when in fact the state could have built the home, owned the home, and rented it out as social housing, which in the long term is much better value for money for the state, much better for the individual as well in terms of secure housing and everything else.
It does seem that those two things that you've said there are key to providing affordable homes, secure homes. The first is the direct use of public land to build actually genuinely affordable housing for purchases, as you've said there. But there was very little about that in the actual Affordable Homes Bill. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, the Affordable Homes Bill has three main elements. So it has provisions for direct build affordable homes by local authorities, and that's good. Has provisions around cost rental, and that's also good. And then it has the shared equity loan, subsidy for private developers, and that would be highly problematic. Now, it's a bill, it's a piece of legislation. So because a third of it is on each or whatever, it doesn't mean that the outcome is we're going to get a third direct build, a third cost rental, and a third private subsidy. You kind of have to look at the budget to figure out where the government's priority is in that. And in the budget, the priority and the larger amounts of spending on affordable housing, unfortunately, are all the subsidies for private developers, which will inflate house prices and home prices. So that's the problem. So the cost rental and direct build parts of the affordable housing bill, by and large, that's quite good. The problem is the resources aren't being put in there at a kind of government level. That's not where the priority is. So, could we?
So, what sort of funding is going into the three?
Well, it's the for this year. The top amount of funding is going into the the Help to Buy measures, those subsidies. Second amount is going into the equity, the shared equity, and then there's some funding for cost rental, and then it's tiny amounts in terms of direct build affordable housing. So it's this year it's a projected 530 cost rental and direct build affordable homes. Vast bulk of those are cost rental. So we're looking at tiny numbers of direct build affordable housing at the moment. There are more models showing it can be done, and we're going to hear lots from the Minister for Housing about the 30 odd homes in his constituency that are getting built in Lusk. And as I said, it is a really good model, but thousands of those that are needed. Mm.
And is there any projections for the coming years of how many of these are going to be built, both cost rental and the direct build affordable?
No, and this is what's missing, because the election last year was, 50,000 direct build affordable homes. We were promised by the end of the summer we'd get details of the affordable housing scheme and all the rest. Didn't come in the autumn. We finally got this bill, and we're only kind of piecing this together bit by bit. But there's vague aspirations of doing this on a larger scale. But in terms of concrete, all we really know is that we're getting this 530. A lot of the 530 homes. There's a lot of emphasis now going towards, the Land Development Agency, it being the driver of the delivery of affordable homes and cost rental homes. But the bill that's in front of the door at the moment, highly problematic, because, it allows for...
This is a separate bill now. It's a separate bill.
Because it allows for the sale to private developers, because it's saying... So
maybe you could just outline the key measures in the LDA bill in terms of what's proposed, because listeners might be familiar with that.
Yeah, so it's indicating 50% of the homes on public land would be affordable, 10%, it doesn't mention this in the bill, but Part 5 would apply, so 10% would be social, and then the other 40% would be full market price. There's a difficulty, so look, I think it should be 100% social and affordable, end of story. Public land up until recently was only used for social housing. We're now in this situation where there's a lot of push from government and Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael for a good chunk of public land to be used for private, full market, unaffordable housing, which I think is not acceptable at all. So the issue on this with the affordable housing, though, is that while it's going to be called affordable housing, I don't think a lot of it will end up being actually all that affordable. It will be discounted. It won't be the same price as full market price or premium level housing on those lands. But it isn't being, because a lot of this is going to be private developer led, because they have higher costs in terms of getting finance, in terms of risks, in terms of profit, in terms of contingency, in terms of what they pay out, in terms of professional fees, all this. And we know from the studies done that more than half of a build cost of an apartment are a house by the private sector, more than half that cost is the soft costs. It's not about the build costs or the material costs or the labor costs. It's the other costs, including land and speculation and everything else. So if you can cut back on those costs, you can actually deliver homes at a much more affordable price. And if you can make sure there's good supply of land put into the mix, and if you control kind of any subsidies so that it doesn't feed developers pushing things up, you can bring it down. So that's one element of the bill. There's no protection against these homes going to REITs, international investment funds. There's a real problem in terms of I think a land development agency is a really good idea. I think we should have one. We need to have really active land management in Ireland for housing, like they have in other countries. Be fully supportive of that. It's done really well in countries like Germany and the Netherlands. The price of land is frozen in Germany when it's designated for development. There's basically no land speculation, and this leads to more affordable homes for people. So that's a really good idea. That's not what they're doing here. So what they should be doing here is giving the Land Development Agency strong compulsory purchase order powers so that it can buy up agricultural land on the edges of towns or urban centres, so that then there's a pipeline of land bought at an affordable price that can then be rezoned and planned for housing and then brought on stream. And that should all be done, by the state or local authorities. So cut out kind of this kind of windfall profits people make when they get their private land rezoned and it can increase in value tenfold or a hundredfold. cut all of that out, as it's been in other countries. But for that to happen, we'd need strong CPO, compulsory purchase order powers, for the Land Development Agency. That's not in the bill. That's completely missing. They do have some limited CPO powers, but it's only for, if you like, access land to public land, you know, to stop kind of ransom strips or to put in infrastructure, but doesn't allow the Land Development Agency to build up these strategic land banks. So what will actually happen over time is the public land bank will contract as the Land Development Agency takes it over from different public bodies, builds it out or sells it on to private developers or whatever, it will contract rather than expand over time, which is the approach we need to be taking. We need to be expanding it and then building it out and putting in the infrastructure. And if you do that and you plan it well, you get good communities, good infrastructure. You can put the infrastructure in advance. You get you capture the land uplift, the land value uplift from putting in infrastructure. You capture that publicly rather than someone privately making a killing because you've put in, you know, a Lewis line or a road or whatever, or cycleways.
And one of the controversial things in that bill is the proposal that the ability of local councillors to stop the sale or transfer of public land will be removed.
Yeah, so the Land Development Agency under the bill can go onto any public land, do surveys, produce reports, say, we want this land for housing. I've no particular issue with that much of it. They can then go to the minister and say, well, here's our report, and the minister signs off, and then it has to be transferred to the Land Development Agency. So there's no say by local councillors on the land they manage on behalf of the local community. No say at all in that. They can't stop it. If you take, for example, the Oscar Traynor Road, where the councillors have correctly said, we only want affordable social cost rental on these lands, the minister can now, with the Land Development Agency, if this passes, the minister can basically effectively take that land off Dublin City Council, regardless of what the councillors say or want. And then if the Land Development Agency so sees fit, it can then sell that land to a private developer, albeit that it will have to have a mix of housing on it. But if it's developed out by a private developer, the so-called affordable bit is not going to be all that affordable, let alone the 40% then that will be full market price. So this is the problem. And the ability for councillors to say, no, we want our local community, we have a housing need here, we have a big housing waiting list, we need our land that previously would have been all for social housing, we need social housing to go in there at this amount or this percentage, that ability can be overridden. I think, and more problematically, the management of councils can now then say to the councillors, you know, this is our proposal, let's say 20% social housing, 40% affordable and 40% full market price. If you don't go with the proposal that we're given to you, we can tell you now what's going to happen. The Land Development Agency is going to come in and it's going to take it off our hands. So it'll be kind of gun against the head to local councillors to agree to proposals that are put to them by their executives with that threat of, if you don't agree, it's going to be taken out of your hands. So it's kind of poor form in that. I mean, it's important to have those kind of checks and balances in an accountability in democratic structures. This is going to put an awful lot of power in the hands of the Land Development Agency, a huge amount of power, actually, because they will control that entire supply of public land that can be used for housing. And I'd be quite concerned about that and the kind of outcomes that could have. And I would expect as well that the first couple of projects that the Land Development Agency does will be probably amongst their best, because they'll be trying to showcase this is what we can do in terms of cost rental, affordable and so forth. And once they're established in the swing of it, then we're going to see parts of lands, you know, land banks sold off and so forth. That's not going to be their first project, because they'll want to establish a kind of good reputation or whatever. It'll be downhill, unfortunately, I would say, after that, if the kind of right protections aren't put into this bill. Certainly, look, there's no indication as of yet that the minister is in any way serious about putting proper protections and safeguards into the bill. He could easily do that, and then we'd have a very, very different outcome in this. And then we would have a Land Development Agency that would actually be working in, you know, people's interest and actually helping deliver affordable homes.
And in terms of that, what sort of measures do you think should be in place in the bill?
I mean, so we need strong CPO powers so they can compulsory purchase order, let's say, agricultural land for housing and build up that supply of land bank. There should be a ban on the sale of any public lands acquired by the Land Development Agency to private developers. There should be an outright ban on that. And that protection, I think, is very, very important. There should be a ban on any of the homes developed in what's now public lands being sold off to international investment funds or REITs. We need those homes for people here, and they shouldn't effectively have a monopoly buyouts on a scale of those homes that are produced. I think we need in the legislation a guarantee that 100% of the homes built on public land would be affordable, social or cost rental. The fact that we're actually planning to put unaffordable homes that are out of reach for people on our public land at a time when we know thousands and thousands of people are paying really high rents, are now have been locked out of being able to rent at affordable amounts, are being able to purchase at affordable amounts. Like, why would we be doing that as a country? It doesn't make any sense. The private sector already has a huge land bank of development land, controls an awful lot of it and releases it very slowly to keep prices at a level that they want. So why would we be saying, right, in terms of what we have, let's start transferring that to private developers as well, and start giving, we need more options in terms of what we can do publicly. So why would we have a bill that actually diminishes our options and reduces what's going to be made available to people? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, we could easily do with about 10,000 affordable cost rental homes being built directly a year. And public land is absolutely key to doing that and getting that into the supply at a fairly low cost. So why we would not seek to protect ourselves from that, I can't understand.
It seems to me that the issue is back to, are we prepared to make that shift that I talked about at the outset and, that I've set out before and, we've talked about that, the change to actually the state playing that key role of ensuring the direct delivery of both affordable, rental, secure, purchase homes, and that we essentially take a significant part of it out of the market, and that, the core of our problem is we've handed so much over to the market, and it's still, the policies seem to be, to me, still orientated around that. Largely keeping a market system intact that has, inflated house prices, inflated rents, and is sort of tinkering around, hoping to, convince a few, first-time home buyers to, get them on board with a policy or like Help to Buy, but really no radical change to the housing system. And we can see that in the UK, that, this crisis can go on. It can go on for a long, long time. And you can have this system where, increasing numbers of people are left out and excluded from the housing system unless you make a change.
100%, and actually the UK, unfortunately, is a real example of the dangers here. And one of the big problems of housing in the UK has been the amount of public land privatised in the last few decades, and that was government policy. And like effectively, like what the private sector does and the private developers do, and they do this well. Well, sometimes they do it well. Sometimes there's issues with building defects, but that's probably another day's work. But what they do is they supply as much as they can. They like to supply high-end premium homes. And that makes absolute sense from their point of view, because if you had a choice as a developer between building an affordable home, three bed or something like that, that you can sell at an affordable price for €250,000, or a home that you can, bring on stream for €400,000, €450,000, and that you can sell off to an international investment fund, why on earth would you try and do the affordable option? I mean, it's not in your interests.
Yeah.
You're trying to maximize your return. So as long as you can build towards the higher end, high income part of the housing demand, of course you're going to build towards that, and you're not going to want to pitch at more affordable prices. Makes no sense. So that's why you have to have that done at a kind of more direct state level, and that's what works. Now you can do that in different ways. It can be local authority led. It can be Land Development Agency led. It can be you can have a role for not-for-profit housing providers as well, if that's properly regulated. But if you're relying on for-profit, for-maximum return builders and developers to deliver affordable homes for yourself, you're not going to succeed. And if you give them subsidies and that's not properly controlled, it just leads to house prices going up and home prices going up.
Absolutely, and adding to that,
that's just basic. I mean, that's just basic kind of economics, and you know, all the kind of economists, left, right, all the rest, all kind of agree on that. Like, there's not much of a disagreement there. But in housing policy, on a political level, it doesn't seem to be understood across the board.
Yeah, and you add to that, of course, the investment funds and the role they play, and of course, as well, the idea of you know, allowing housing simply be a market system and a market commodity is fundamentally flawed, because housing is not a commodity. Housing is a fundamental need. And of course, that brings us on to a fundamental human right as well that is acknowledged internationally, but we still don't acknowledge here or provide for. And do you, in terms of the Housing Committee, and we've seen talk or, you know, murmurings, possibilities that the right to housing, and I actually think the minister referred to this at a conference recently, that the right to housing, the referendum on the right to housing, could be put into a housing commission. And of course, there's a big fear that that would mean essentially putting it down the line rather than actually progressing this as the wording exists. It's there to amend the constitution, to insert a right to housing. Where do you see it at the moment?
Yeah, I'd be fearful that it goes into a housing commission. And, you know, if there is a housing commission, they have a whole range of different areas to look at. I think they're, as you say, there is a wording there now. There is the commitment in the programme for government to have a referendum. I think a referendum should happen as soon as, you know, kind of COVID and public health allows. So we should be planning for a referendum, you know, take place, let's say, next year, or when, you know, when everyone is vaccinated. And that work should be happening now at a government level. There isn't any evidence they are, or that they're engaging with, you know, the proposed wording that's come out from people who've been working in this area. So, and like every time there's any serious measure debated in the Dáil around housing, legal issues, constitutional issues are raised, and we're told, oh, well, you can't do that because the constitution won't support in terms of private property rights and so forth. And if there, now, I think that's sometimes a spurious argument, and I think it's not an excuse not for doing things, but it would certainly strengthen our hand if there was a right to housing in the constitution. The sooner we do that, the sooner we can actually drive some of these measures forward. I mean, for example, what I was talking about there about having compulsory purchase order powers for the Land Development Agency, if there was a right to housing in the constitution, that would really solidify the constitutional basis for such powers. I think it's not necessary. I think it could be done anyway. But to remove any doubt on it by having that right to housing in the constitution, we'd be on much, much stronger ground on it. So it you know, it's a foundational piece to allow other progressive you know, legislation and stuff to go through. So we need that kind of foundational piece as soon as possible. And I mean, for the government, it would be an easy win. They'd be seen to, without actually, you know, delivering on a single additional cost rental or affordable home, they'd act, or social home, they would actually be seen to be doing something. They'd probably get a bit kudos from it or whatever. So I think they've nothing to lose from going ahead with it. And
I think so. I think that, you know, the majority of people, the opinion polls show, are in favour of it. And I think it's something that needs to be progressed quite quickly. Just to finish up, Keane, I know it's something that, you know, you've raised as well in the Dáil. The issue of homeless, the deaths amongst the homeless people who are homeless has been quite concerning, the increase in recent years, but also the wider conditions of the emergency accommodation. And we had the minister referring to it today in the Examiner. What was your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have huge concerns about conditions in some of the private providers of emergency accommodation for homeless people. And there's been a real growth in using private providers in the last few years.
Private for profit providers,
yeah. And so, like, the not for profit NGOs, they come at providing services for homeless people from a kind of, you know, a kind of care ethos. Their interest in the person, their interest in supporting the person and trying to get them out of homelessness. A for-profit provider has no interest in that. They're making a fee by providing the accommodation. They're not interested in trying to support the person out of homelessness or not. We know that the NGOs, for example, would have a lot of trained and qualified support workers working in their accommodation. We know that the for-private profit providers don't do that. There's been, you know, questions about whether or not their staff are even Garda vetted. In some cases, staff consist of, you know, security guards on the front door and this sort of stuff. So people aren't getting the level of support that they should. We've had reports of, I mean, one of the reports that I heard about was where a man had been discharged from hospital because of a head injury, and his private hostel refused to allow him back into his bed, deemed him a risk because he was coming out of hospital with a head injury. And so then he was forced to sleep in the street, which obviously for his own safety and well-being, discharged from a hospital with a head injury is utterly, you know, it's appalling treatment of a person. And this is what's going on with some of these private providers. There's a huge issue with them not being inspected properly. I raised this with the Dublin Homeless Regional Executive last week, and they admitted that in a good number of circumstances, when they have been inspected, there's been no written reports afterwards, which is an appalling way to do inspections. It's an absolute basic of it is that you have a written report, some evidence of it that you can then go back, you know, later on and say, well, these are the issues we raised, you know, have they been dealt with? Are standards improving? They don't publish the inspection reports of any of these visits, so there's no ability to have that kind of cross-learning across the sector or any of that accountability. And again, that's a basic in terms of inspections in any sector. So you publish the reports. It means everyone can learn from it. It's not always, inspections aren't about punishing the provider. It's about identifying areas that need to be improved, everyone learning from it, and having accountability if there's consistent failings in that. None of this has been done in this area. There's a really heavily worked on national quality standards framework for all providers of homeless services. It's meant to apply to all providers. But currently it only applies to the NGOs and not-for-profits, doesn't apply to the private providers. I've raised this with the Minister for Housing and the Dáil a good few times. He maintains that it absolutely does apply and is being applied. But when you talk to any of the homeless organisations, you talk to the Dublin Homeless Regional Executive, all the people who are in charge of carrying out these inspections and so forth, they all confirm that it doesn't apply. There are no national quality standards for private providers. We've had confirmation that there's an each homeless person in emergency accommodation is meant to have a support plan to help them get out of homelessness and exit from homelessness. And it's been confirmed from the Dublin Homeless Regional Executive that nearly every adult in private emergency accommodation from the private providers has no support plan. So these basics that should be in place aren't in place. And all of this does, sadly, have an effect in terms of homeless deaths, because people living in emergency accommodation should be getting a basic level of support, should have support plans, should be having basic access to, you know, basic standards. And because this isn't being done properly and isn't being applied, this is part of the problem. And it is disturbing that when they are, we don't have automatic, there should be an automatic investigation. Every time a homeless person here dies in homeless services, there should be an automatic investigation into that to find out why. There should be, you know, they should be talking to the service providers and trying to learn from this to prevent further deaths from occurring. We don't have that in place here. And all that's happening now is they're going to do a kind of a cursory look at homeless deaths, but they won't be doing that kind of deep dive, talking to everyone and getting those kind of learnings. And that's just really, really, really important if we want to address this. And by not asking those questions, not talking to engaging with people saying, well, what's happened here? What could have been done better? We're not going to pick up those learnings. We're not going to improve this.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important point that it again reflects the lack of valuing, you know, the lack of valuing of, you know, people who are in these situations, people in poverty, people who are in, you know, homelessness, the lack of dignity that's given to them as human beings, what we do. And we still don't, it shows, you know, we still don't have a rights-based society, a rights-based, you know, state that, and I think, you know, that's what's needed.
Yeah, and I think that is a big part of the problem here, because there does seem to be an institutional attitude of, well, sure, they have a bed. Is that not enough or whatever? Yeah. Sure, we've given them a bed. Sure, what's this talk about you know, human rights and all this sort of stuff. And it actually, when you look at the conditions that a good number of homeless people are in terms of emergency accommodation, very basic breaches of human rights are going on. So we've had reports of providers saying, no chatting rules, you can't chat to other people who live here. I mean, that's telling people you can't talk and have conversations. Ridiculous. Like, it's just, and it would not be accepted in to anybody else. And it should not be accepted in terms of people who've become homeless. And, what we should have in terms of all homeless providers is it should be HICWA going in and doing inspection reports. They have the skills and the experience of this, and they should be publishing those reports. Anything short of that, and we're going to continue to have, you know, really bad outcomes and bad quality in terms of provision.
Yeah.
Obviously, what we're trying to do is get people out of homelessness. It's not, you know, it's not about simply about the emergency accommodation, but we will, even from a financial point of view, we're going to save money if we support people in emergency accommodation better to get out of homelessness. That's going to mean we're going to be spending less on emergency accommodation. Even from that point of view, it would help. Let alone on a human level, of course, it's going to be, you know, massive. It will massively help if people are supported to get out of homelessness and out of emergency accommodation. That's where all the effort should be going, rather than. And I've heard reports from people who said that there's been people in homeless hostels and stuff, basically forgotten about and left there sometimes for years in terms of not being engaged with and not being supported to get out of emergency accommodation, and basically the kind of whole system has forgotten that they're even there and forgotten to engage with them, which is. And you have to, you know, people who have lost their home have often lost a lot of kind of self-confidence, and, you know, things have gotten so bad for them that sometimes they do need a little bit of, assistance and support to get out of that situation because of that kind of downward cycle of luck that they've been on. Same as any of us would be, like, you know, if you hit that situation, you do need. Things are going well for you in life and they're going in the right direction. You don't need it, you know, but all of us, if it's going in the wrong direction, can benefit from a bit of support.
Absolutely. And it comes back to that fundamental point that the state, you know, should have an obligation to ensure that everybody's right to housing is met, that everybody has that basic, you know, and not talking about shelter of emergency accommodation that is hugely damaging to people, that doesn't solve the situation, but actually ensures people have a home. And I think that is really, it comes back to me anyway, that rights-based approach needs to be put in place. And just on that as well, if people are interested or they haven't done it yet, we've highlighted that Focus Ireland are calling on the government to develop a plan to end homelessness, and they're looking for people. They've got a petition. If you go to focus.ie, end homelessness, they've got a petition there that they're trying to put pressure on the government, which I think is very important. Kino Callaghan, the member of the Oireachtas Housing Committee, Social Democrat TD for Dublin Bay North, thank you very much for joining me to discuss housing, homelessness and these issues on Reboot Republic today.
Thanks very much, Roy.
I look forward to having you back soon as well. And a reminder to all our listeners that we are an independent podcast. We rely on you to fund us to keep the cost of these podcasts, cost to produce, to put out. Please support us. We know there's lots of listeners out there, and we really encourage you to become a supporter of ours. Go over to become a patron. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, whatever you can, each month. Help us out to keep going, and we will talk to you all soon.